Well, it looks like we got story time with Laura today.
Yes, today will be a little bit of a different episode, I guess you could say.
I feel like all our episodes are different.
That's true. I feel like I use that phrase a lot.
So
watch, they're all be like the same.
Laura got in a submarine and went across the country for a once in a lifetime.
Hopefully more than once in a lifetime, but
the moment was once in a lifetime. It's something definitely you can do again. But Laura is going to share with us about the time that she went to Africa.
Yeah. So we are going to talk about it. And it actually was a 22-hour flight. Thank you very much.
What? Not 3 days by submarine?
No. Oh. That would be pretty cool, though. I would like to take a submarine. But let's dive in.
The PTA Podcast with your hosts, Ken.
And Laura. Thanks again for joining for another exciting episode. Got it.
Anyways. So, last week, we talked about... Or maybe the previous week. I don't know.
It was last Friday.
Last Friday. We talked about traveling as a PTA and how you can go across the country. And then Laura said this term, Doctor Without Borders. And I said, I don't know what that is. She looked at me like I was an idiot. So it's where you can practice with no borders, I think. I don't know. I still don't really know what it is.
So we talked about, like, it. Honestly, that portion kind of got cut a little bit.
It did get cut.
We decided
we still
to,
talked about
it. Yeah, we talked about it, and we decided it needed its own episode because it was just too long.
So with that being said, Laura went on a trip across the seas ocean. And oceans and had some volunteer work. Being exposed to kind of some medical professionals, working with people in underprivileged areas. So Laura is going to tell us about her experience.
Yeah. So I'm going to it's going to be a little bit of an episode of story time with Laura, I guess.
A little bit of an episode.
Most of the episode.
It's going to be an entire episode of story time with Laura.
We'll talk about like how I got into it, how are ways you can look into it and things like that. But one question real quick. You mentioned oceans. Now, technically, is it one ocean or is it multiple oceans?
It's like asking if a straw has one or two holes in it.
Which one is it? Yeah.
My answer's omitted. It's got three holes.
I'm
going to puncture more holes in it.
That's a good... Is it this or is it that? You should take that one to Bart next time.
It's going to be a segment.
But, so... I went to Kenya for 2 weeks. I went with part of my church at the time, and it was a group of 22 of us. It was right after I had graduated college with my kinesiology degree, and I was looking into DPT school. So what we ended up doing is we put together, my church had kind of put together a group, and it was about 22 of us. Like I said, we had... one PTA, which was actually my mother, me, and then an OT. And then we also had a doctor and a nurse. And then we had kind of more just regular people that were the rest of us. I hate to say that, but like not medical field. Let me put it that way.
Wait, so how many people total were there?
22.
22.
Yeah. So five of us had medical backgrounds in some sort of way. So... when we got over there, they kind of showed us. So we went to Kenya. We went into the slums of Kenya, which is Mathari Valley. And what we did is we were going over there with a organization called Mission of Hope, who has a very, how would you put it? Like, they're just very active within the slums on how to help people get out of the slums, how to better their life in the slums.
Just the whole Mission for Hope?
Yeah. That's the best way to communicate. Like, yeah, they're just there to help the community, I guess you could say.
Yeah. It's like, I would still say it's like an organization.
Yeah. Which it totally is. Yeah. It's a world organization because there's a lot of different things. So just talking a little bit about Kenya real quick so you guys can get a clearer picture. When I say slums, we're talking about no running water, no running sewage. Their houses are usually six by six, sleeping like five people. They usually are they're cooking on the floors or outside their little huts. They're made out of just tin pieces from old roofing or other projects. It's literally the worst of the worst to live in. You know, people are literally taking dumps in the middle of the street. There's nothing but trash everywhere. It's not a good living situation at all. And then also, education in Kenya is not a birthright. It is not free. In order to go to school, even elementary school, you have to pay for it. So a lot of these kids in the slums do not have an opportunity to go. So Mission of Hope kind of started by giving these kids opportunities to go to school. So they founded schools, and then they also get the kids sponsored by people who usually live in different countries. Like, we sponsor a kid and we pay for his education. And the great thing about this education is they usually get two meals a day. They get breakfast and lunch, which sometimes those are the only meals the kids will be able to eat. And then they also have a safe place to go to school. And those schools are within the slums too. So they're not super far away. They're within the communities. So with this organization, you can go on a trip out there and you can kind of just help out with what their needs. So some of them ran classroom. We had a couple of teachers who ran like classroom education with the teachers, with the doctor and the nurse. They were part of another doctor who lived in the area. And they did a clinic for all of the families and students that attended the school we were at. And then the three of us who were more kind of physical therapy and OT, occupational therapy minded, we actually went out into the slums, into homes to where people had either gotten injured and they couldn't make it in, or to see kids who maybe were born with certain disabilities, because in Kenya, it's still, at least when I went in 2012, it was still really looked down upon for those who were born with any type of ailment or disability, that they were sinful, that the kid should not be alive, and literally some would be unfortunately left by, like, abandoned by their families.
So, wait, so what was the duration of your stay? How long?
2 weeks.
How much was it?
I think at that time we had to pay pretty much kind of for our lodging and for plane tickets. And so I want to say we each had to raise about $3,600.
Per person.
Per person.
But this is like money you raise through the program, and then...
Through the program will help, and then through like our church, you know, we raised through that. We did bake sales, we did yard sales, we just... Or you could even pay your own way. Like the doctor we were with, he paid for him and his family.
Yeah.
And then that way he made sure like anybody else who's trying to raise money can kind of contribute. Now there's other organizations out there that will help find your way. Like, you don't have to... I went with the church. You don't have to go with the church. There's other nonprofit organizations out there that will kind of work with you and maybe even pay their way through funding and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So to give Laura a break from talking.
Yeah.
There is a program called International Volunteer HQ, which does just what Laura's talking about. So you have the opportunity to volunteer as a physical therapist. I couldn't find whether or not PTAs are allowed. It just says physical therapists. I would hope so. If not, I would probably just make sure with them if you can or can't go. But they have destinations like Guatemala, Kenya, like Laura was talking about, Uganda, China, Bogota. There's quite the variety, and it starts at a 1 week trip up to 12 weeks, and you pay by the week. So it's around $210 to $300 per week, depending on where you want to go. But they'll choose the area, they'll choose the lodging, the food, everything is covered from there. And then you still have someone you can report to and have everything, like all your needs met while you're there. So it's definitely a good opportunity if you want to go international.
Yeah.
I know last week we kind of covered being in the country, but it's more to get paid while you go around the country. This is something you're paying for, but you're able to volunteer around the world.
This is definitely like a way to kind of like go see the world, and but also help the world too. So like a lot of times, even if you're having to pay for it, you can work with organizations to fundraise the money and that kind of stuff. And let's be honest, if I went up to Ken and said, hey, can you give me $100 to go travel and work with these kids over in China, but can you help me pay my way? He'd probably look at me like I was crazy. But if I went up to him and said, hey, I'm volunteering to go to China and work with these kids and, you know, educate on what and what, you are more likely to donate. Ken's a nice guy.
More inviting, I guess.
Yeah. So like,
put it that way.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, it's a way for you to travel and see something new, but also give back, which is kind of cool. But going back, so like our goal was to go out into these homes, which was very unique because most of the people actually stayed at the school. We were going out into the community, which was interesting, which I was stared at a lot. That was the most interesting thing. So a lot of the times they were saying definitely some of the young kids are like they've never like left the slums. So like a lot of times they actually don't even see like different races than them. So they kind of get like in awe when they do, just because it's so new to them. So like you get stared at as you're going around, and you stick out like a sore thumb clearly. And it was really interesting. So like one of the guys we went and saw, we went there and he had actually been previously hit by a car in Kenya. And because of that, he was paralyzed from the waist down pretty much. And so we went in and we worked with him of like exercises he could do for his arms, ways to better like transfer, to decrease some of the stress on his upper body because his upper body was starting to get sore because of the way he was moving around. What type of crutches, like he had a couple different crutches that they had just people had gathered for him over the years, which ones were the better, how to use them properly, which is, again, you don't think about it. You think in the U.S., like, there's all the time we have to teach people how to use a cane. Well, there's no one over in these third world countries telling, like, definitely in these slums, how to use a cane.
Yeah, how to properly use assistive devices.
A crutch or anything, like how they actually should be. And so we did some of that work with him. And it was really cool because we went around. We did some stuff with some kids who were born with disabilities, educating the parents on things to adapt, things to look out for, things that could happen. So there was a lot of that kind of stuff.
And kind of like what she's touching on too, like they don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. So when that's the case, you go in and you not only educate the individual who needs to be educator, you educate everyone else too.
Yeah,
because it kind of follows under the whole, if you feed a man a fish, or you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, you teach him how to fish, you feed him for life,
right? Yes. Yeah.
So it's, you go and you try to educate everybody. Mm-hmm. That way it can get passed on more and more, and you're not like giving knowledge to one person, there's no follow-up.
Yeah,
you know, you have to be able to follow up, other people have to be able to follow up, and to do that you have to educate more than just that individual.
And you have to do it within their means there too. Like, we can't educate them on how to, you know, use a power wheelchair if they're never going to have a power wheelchair. Or if even if they had a power wheelchair, let me tell you, you would not be able to move that thing in the slums. Like, the roads are not going to work for it. Like, so there's points of, like, you need to be aware of what you're educating to. Situational awareness, I guess, really, of like, is this actually useful for them in their area? Do I need to adapt it in certain things? Like, that sometimes was the case, is like, we don't have weights for people to use out in the slums. You don't have TheraBands for people to use out in the slums. You have to adapt to what they have. And yeah, you could bring weights, you could bring, like, you could easily travel with TheraBands, right? But what happens when that TheraBand breaks?
Yeah, or like if you only have enough for, you know, a couple people.
Yeah.
Then the next person's like, oh, sorry, I already gave all my bands away.
So it's better to teach them in something different of like how to use, like we used water bottles, we used cans, we educated on how to, like, use heavier objects and what would be better and what would be less and like effective and different things like that. Like you can't, for example, isometrics, you can't do that on their doors. They don't have doors. They don't have walls. Their walls, you put that much pressure, some of them might come crashing down, honestly. So like you have to think about certain things different. And so like there was times where we used, we suggested those exercises for some of the locals. And instead what we would do is we'd have someone else act as their door. So we'd show them, hey, put your hand here. He's going to press. And then you move it. Press. Like it's kind of almost like a manual muscle test, but actually doing the exercise with someone. And so like you had to be very resourceful of what was around you and be very aware of how you're educating them.
With that, would you say it's probably better to go and do this volunteer work once you're more experienced? Because I feel like that's what we kind of do now. Like,
I think it would be helpful.
We have our clinic, we have our equipment, but you make it as good as you can think of, really. Mm-hmm. Like only your imagination is the limit. So once you have this full arsenal of like in your toolkit, do you feel like that would be more beneficial to go? Because then you can go and really think outside the box. What do they have? What do they need? What can they use for certain activities?
Yes.
Or do you think it's better to go like up front so you can really like absorb everything while you're there?
Think both. There's yes to both. There's so like I went, of course, before I went through the PTA program. So I had background in kinesiology and you know I just honestly come out of an athletic training class, so like I had some of like the general stuff going on. My mom, who's a PTA, and then also the OT who's with us, they had been in the field for decades, and watching the two of them work was definitely like eye-opening and very like, wow, this is, to me it was really neat to watch it because of the fact that I could apply some of the things I watched them do now into my actual career. So I think it's really cool to see that as a younger career. However, was I more important to the team than the one of them? No. Like I was not as useful to the team. I was literally.
That's why like, they have the programs for like students too. Mm-hmm. Like would you recommend a student going?
I think it's cool to see. Yeah. Like, I definitely think in the beginning, I think it's really cool because it can open up an eye of how you would want to treat day to day back here. But do I think like you can go over and lead a group to do something like that with no experience? No. Like, do I feel like I could go over now and just go for it and like I could go out on my own with bodyguards and do it? Yes.
Bodyguards.
Well, in all fairness, so the slums we were in were not always the greatest place. Most of the times, Mission of Hope was known within the slums. Like they knew not to mess with them because they knew people were there to help them. But the slums are literally like lawless land. Like for example, a week before we got there, a driver was driving his car through the slums and he hit a person who ran out in front of him and they took him out of the car and stoned him to death before the local, like the authorities could even get there. Jeez. Like it's just that's how they do it. So there's like no law or anything going on within the slums. And so like some areas can get, I'm sure you guys can all imagine, get very dark and very dangerous in certain areas. A lot of the people will either be drunk on really bad alcohol and things like that, or they also get high off of glue bottles. So it can be very dangerous in certain areas. So for the protection of us, they had us usually with three guys who were also our guides, and then two females who worked with the company too, who also was more of like, I guess you could say our handlers, like they were telling us where to go and everything like that. But we didn't, at certain areas they were like, yeah, we're not going down there. Like,
yeah, there's like a hard no.
There's a hard no, we're not going there. Yeah. There's other areas that are like, we're not going to be in here long. Other areas it was chill. But like one of the kids we went and saw, who's really cool. We believe he had CP. Of course, we're not doctors, so we cannot diagnose. But based off of everything that the mom was telling us, he lined up with CP.
And like how he was presenting and everything.
Mm-hmm. So we got there and he hadn't been out of his little, their little shanty. And I think he was 14 at the time. So 10 years, because I think his mom said 4 is when he stopped going outside. He only stayed in his bed. He peed in his bed. He ate in his bed. He laid in his bed. His name was Moses. While we were there, you know, I took a back seat for sure on this one because this was, you know, really out of my wheelhouse. But this is what was amazing to watch. I watched my mom and OT, like our OT specialist. They worked, and it was honestly, this part was really cool too, because I got to watch them both interact with each other in their own fields and how to better like this person's life. They talked about hygiene, how to get them up and get them ready, how to best get them to eat. You know, they started picking up on, they noticed he liked to tactile cueing. He liked to touch things. And so they talked about behavioral stuff, how that could help with, you know, when he's frustrated and other things like that. Well, he hadn't been standing in, you know, probably at least 8 years. So they decided to get him up and standing. They got him up and standing, and my mom walked him to the door. And again, this was a really cool thing to watch them both interact with different fields because, you know, my mom, who was a PTA gate and everything's more on our end than OT, but it was so fascinating to watch the OT be able to hand it on and kind of follow my mom's lead because of the background of us working together.
Yeah.
So they walked him, they got him up and standing, and then he was kind of doing well. Mom's like, let's just walk him to the door. They walked him to the door. He got to see outside and his face literally lit up. And then they walked him back and, you know, got him in bed. And then the mom had asked us like, oh, well, he has a rash. And we're like, well, we don't know that is, but we do have a clinic at the school going on. And so we're like, if you could get him to the school, then, you know, our doctors can look over him. Yeah. And then the people we were with too were like, we'll try to figure it out. Like, we're, you know, we've still got more days. Like, we'll try to see if we can get you someone to help you get him, because it was a pretty darn trek. Like, it was quite a few miles away from the school they were. So we went back to the school after seeing a couple more houses. And honestly, like, I remember some of the places and some of the people we met, but Moses is just like this kid's ingrained in my mind and I will never forget him. So we went back and we're telling people about Moses and like how he hadn't literally seen outside for 10 years practically. And you know how this kid's just like, you could tell someone's in there, but just yearning to get out and just struggling. And there's, you know, this kind of the sad situation they were in. And then we hear, you know, we were all eating lunch at this time and they're like, oh, did you guys hear Moses is outside? And we're like, oh no. So we, of course, like, we're like so excited. We're like,
see him, yeah.
And everybody else is like, wait, we want to hear about this kid. Cause like they hung around the school, so they kind of knew everything. So we came back with all the interesting nice stories. So we all run outside. And again, this kid hadn't walked by himself in like 10 years. So his mom's they're sitting on a bench and we're talking to them. And, we were, you know, asking the mom, how'd you get here? And she's like, oh, one of our neighbors let us borrow his wheelbarrow. We wheelbarrowed him down here. And so we're just, you know, super excited. So, like, I didn't really interact with him too much in their house because of just how small it was. But me and him sat across from each other. And so, like, you know, we saw, he'd see me quite often. Well, they were sitting on one bench. I was sitting across the way and, like, kind of perpendicular to where he was. And we're all sitting there and all of a sudden he pops up, walks over to me, sits down, grabs my arm and has me just rub his hands because that's what he liked. And same thing with his dad, and his mom bawled. And we're like, did you know he could do that? Like, he just got up and walked. And she's like, no, yeah, I didn't, like, know he could do that.
Seen it.
She hadn't seen it. She's in, like, you could just tell, like, it's raw emotion coming from her. And the reason I tell this story is because later on, you know, we got updates from the people we were with. Moses was living a great life. And Moses was going out, playing with other kids, knew what time to get home. His quality of life had improved from just laying in this bed. And it wasn't just from us. It was also the people who went afterwards and followed up with him and were checking in with him. And it was from Mission of Hope checking in. Unfortunately, it is more common than not kids who have those kind of serious ailments and disabilities do not make it very long just because of their quality of life. And unfortunately, Moses did have quite a long time of just laying in bed, and it caused a lot of internal issues going on too, and he sadly passed away. But it's great to know that his last lives weren't just, or his last days and everything weren't just laying on a bed and never seeing outside again.
Yeah.
And that's the reason I tell this, is just because of the fact that it's, if you ever are like, I want to do something a little bit different, I want to do more, I want to help, but you don't feel like even 2 weeks can make a difference, 2 weeks can make a difference. It could be the start of the ripple effect. You could be part of the ripple effect if you're coming in even afterwards. And I think that's why I wanted to like share the Moses story, is because it wasn't because of just us, but it started with us going in, and then it continued with those who followed up with him. And so by going to some of these organizations, doing something else, it's a great perspective. And like I said, I learned a lot going in, even early in my career, technically before, I guess you could even say, it really started, because I got to watch the outside of the box thinking, the way you really treat, in this case, you really had to treat the patient before you could even treat the disease. And half the time you didn't even know what the disease was. You didn't even know what the ailment was. You can physically see it, but you don't know what it is. And so it just gave me a whole unique perspective on kind of that's those situations and how to carry that forward within my career. So,
and then back to our catchphrase, where you definitely treat the patient, not the diagnosis. Because yeah, in your case, you don't even know what the diagnosis is.
Yeah. And like, I'd love to go back. I want to so bad. It's been really hard just because of the fact that, you know, I went to school, and then getting out of school, debt, you got to work, and then trying to get vacation time. Who knows? Maybe this year I might be doing a podcast from Kenya.
Right.
Or whenever we can do again. But it's definitely my goal to come back. Maybe I'll drag Ken along with me.
Oh, no. You just told me not to ask what's in the meat.
Yeah, you don't ask what's in the meat.
I think the big things are definitely, it gives you another perspective, mm-hmm. kind of seeing what others don't have, and kind of working with what you got. And at the same time, you have to know, even if like your intentions are good, like bringing like E-STIM and the TheraBands and stuff, kind of like we talked about, it's nice to use while you're there, yes, but it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So even though like the intentions are well and everything like that, just kind of keep that in mind, where you kind of have to go in, work with what you got, and just appreciate what you can do while you're there.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You're not there to try to change their way of living. You're there to try to help them live their best life in their situation, if that makes sense.
It does.
But yeah, it was great. If you're ever, I think the reason we also wanted to share this is just it came up as we were talking about the traveling around the country, you know, around the U.S. But like, we also wanted to bring it up because of the fact that some people don't know that this might be an opportunity for them to look into.
And there are companies that partner with APTA too, if you don't want to do the one that I mentioned before, mm-hmm. that you can go through the APTA and find ways to do it. I would just make sure that they accept PTAs. And just kind of go from there.
Yeah, or even if you know some of your local organizations who do, you never know.
Right, well, I think that was it. A story time with Laura.
Yeah, that was it. That was my Kenya one. If you guys ever have any questions on anything, let me know. I was going to say we might post pictures, but I'm getting on a boat.
Yeah, I think you'll be on a boat by the time this comes
out. Pretty close to it, at least.
All right. Well, anyways, be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of the works. Thank you so much for everyone for listening, new people and old. We appreciate every last one of you.
Yeah, we're coming up to 50 episodes, by the way.
That'd be nice.
If not already.
Huge milestone, actually.
Wow, that's crazy.
For us. We've been doing this for 50 episodes. I would like to say, hopefully we're just getting started and we'll get better as we go along. Anyways, hope you guys have a great weekend and take care.
All right. Bye.
The information in this video or podcast is not intended nor implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content, including text, graphics, images, and information contained in this video or podcast, is for general information purposes only and does not replace your professor's or a consultation from your own doctor or healthcare professional.